There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. It's FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Dalton, just look, tomorrow, the first day of October. I mean, maybe it's the fact that we just hadn't had the cool off or something like that, but I mean, it snuck up on me. So October tomorrow, next thing you know, it's going to be Columbus Day, right? Whenever that is. No big Columbus Day celebrations. We'll let the people who do Columbus Day celebrate that. We'll have the Mardi Gras. Yeah, next thing you know, it's going to be Columbus Day, people. It's like I always say about Arbor Day. Next thing you know, it'll be Arbor Day. All right, taking your text and your calls this hour at 343-0106, 343-0106. Yeah, we'll get into that free speech story out of New York City. I thought that one was fairly interesting as they are telling you what you can and can't say in the city of New York. We'll get to that in a second. Walter's been holding on in Mobile, and he's first up. Hey, Walter.
Hey, Sean. How are you doing?
Doing good. You want to talk about Jack Edwards?
I do. A lot of people, a lot of your listeners may not be aware that Jack Edwards established the Bon Secours National Refuge.
Yeah, and Weeks Bay. And
the Weeks Bay Reserve.
Yeah.
And then he served as chairman for the Weeks Bay Foundation as well when they founded the Weeks Bay Foundation.
You know, Walter, I was talking about this morning, too, with or last hour, actually, with Quinn in my interview with Quinn Hillier about Jack Edwards and said, you know, when he did that in 1980, whatever, that was, let alone there weren't many Democrats doing anything like that, it was unheard of for Republicans to be pushing conservation like that. He was really ahead of his time in that.
He sure was, and that's chronicled in David Morine's book, Good Dirt, which is a great read about land conservation. And David Morine at the time was the head of land conservation for Nature Conservancy Worldwide, and he said that exact statement, that it was just unheard of for a Republican to support land conservation at that time.
You know, it was a different, and Quentin and I's conversation, we talk about the conservation ethic of sportsmen down here. Often folks like me will be called a hook and bullet environmentalist, but, you know, I've gotten enough conversations with people over time. They said, we really don't care how people arrive at that land ethic as long as they have it, and it was something that Jack Edwards had well before it was a fashionable thing.
He sure did, and, you know, he was, when I worked for the Weeks Bay Foundation, he was truly a pleasure to work with. I can tell you, and because many more land conservation projects were done after the reserve was established.
What kind of give people an idea working with former Congressman Edwards? What was that like?
Well, you know, he was very diplomatic. He didn't like to take credit for his work. You know, I would say he was a behind the scenes kind of person, and you know, and he was very black and white. You know, he.
You there? Hello?
Yeah, I am.
Oh, there we
go. I am.
So, I mean, out of your time working with him, I mean, you got to feel pretty good when you're working with a foundation that has somebody who has the decades of experience in Washington that Jack Edwards did. I mean, you know, if he says, well, we can probably make this work or that can't work, you know that this person's not talking out of his ear.
No, he was just great. And I would say he was a one of a kind in that aspect.
That's for sure. Well, I appreciate your call, and keep up the listening, and check back in with us. Good to hear from you. It's been some time, Walter. It's a great legacy. It's a great legacy, and it was, you know, just you can look at that legacy of conservation. You can look at the legacy of what a big deal it was. What a big deal it was to have a Republican congressman, mid-60s, in Alabama. You know, I know sitting here in 2019, it doesn't, you're like, oh, well, who cares? This is not a big deal. You got to take yourself back in time and know what that meant. Terry says, the National Democrats left the voters behind before the state parties did. I feel overlooked by both parties, but more so by the Dems. That was true, Terry, but as a, remember what was happening. This split was very interesting, too. Number one, the fact that Jack Edwards wins as a Republican mid-60s and holds on to that when the others who came in on the Goldwater coattails did not, that he stuck around as a Republican. Number two, you had this time that saying that the National Democrats left the voters behind before the state parties did, but it was another 20 years. It was another 20 years or more before you had Montgomery going Republican. I mean, it wasn't this election cycle and then two more election cycles and Republicans started winning in the state. It was this dichotomy where we had national Republicans, you know, our congressional delegations, and for the bulk of the state, I mean, it turned over time, obviously spearheaded by Jack Edwards, but it took some time. But then you had national delegation being Republicans, state delegation being Democrats. I will say this, that there's part of me that, and whether it's Democrats or Republicans or two, the idea of having two parties with some power in the system is interesting to me. I think it makes for one sword sharpens the other, as the Bible says, and I think it's a good thing. I don't like monoliths because, and now obviously I want our state to be represented with the values of our state, which are conservative, but the idea of having a little bit of push and pull between the two for those years were probably good for Alabama. Probably was good. Taxman saying, timeline here, Baldwin County switched about 30 years ago to Republican in Alabama. Wow, Taxman, that's, I don't doubt your facts at all, but you, like you said, Taxman, I agree, time flies. Wow. Now, you're saying closer to 50 years ago in the 1970s. Don't start talking about 50 years, Taxman. I'm approaching that one. That would be the timeline on that one. But yeah, that was, so people who have just kind of come into paying attention to Alabama politics in the last 15 to 20 years, it wasn't always this way. It was not always this way, and you have people like Jack Edwards that were spearheads of this and way ahead of their time in the mid-1960s. All right, we'll take some more calls on that, but I do want to get into this before we go to the break and get in the story that this was tweeted at me by David over the weekend, I think, and said this would cause my blood to boil or my blood pressure to go up. I did have to call and get more of the blood pressure medicine, big horse pills, after reading this. City of New York on Twitter says, New York City has made it illegal to threaten to call ICE based on discriminatory motive or to tell someone, go back to your country. Hate has no place here. Okay? This will be one of these places where, if you read their headline, you say, well, what's wrong with that? Let's get into the statute. It says, New York City Commission on Human Rights released today a new legal enforcement guidance that defines discrimination on the basis of perceived or actual immigration status and national origin under the New York City human rights law in public accommodations, employment, and housing. The guidance states that the use of the term illegal alien, among others, when used with intent to demean, humiliate, or harass a person, is illegal under the law. Okay. Who decides whether using the term illegal aliens is used to demean, humiliate, or harass? What about if you use it because it's factual? Wait till you hear the fines based on this when we come back. We'll talk about this. Wait till you hear.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Before you know it, it'll be Columbus Day, Dalton, just like that. Before you know it, it'll be, when is Columbus Day? It's in October, right? Before you know it. I often say that. Before you know it, all of a sudden you look up and it's Columbus Day. All right. 343-0106. 343-0106. Our phone number, text line. I want to go back into this. So it's a tweet from New York City. And it says the new, and I want you to understand, I see some people may have fallen in a little bit of a trap there. Understand that I split issues based on consistency. This has no desire to break discrimination laws. Mm-mm. This is the desire to protect First Amendment rights. This is desire to not fall. And does the municipality have the right to do this? Sure they do. They have the right to make whatever bonehead law they want. I also have the right to comment on it. The New York City Commission on Human Rights released today a new legal enforcement guidance that defines discrimination on the basis of perceived or actual immigration status and national origin under the New York City Human Rights Law in public accommodations, employment, and housing. Okay. Point out that there are accommodations, employment, and housing. The guidance states that the use of the term illegal alien, among others, when used with intent to demean, humiliate, or harass a person, is illegal under the law. You see the problem with that sentence? Who decides whether the use was to demean, humiliate, or harass a person? Further, the guidance stipulates that harassing or discriminating against someone for their use of another language or for their limited English proficiency and threatening to call ICE on a person based on a discriminatory motive are considered to be in violation of the law. Fines of up to $250,000, as in $250,000, y'all, can be assessed for each act of willful discrimination, and damages are available to complainants. Okay. Yeah, you see the motivation there. Once again, if somebody is being discriminated, if somebody is a legal resident of the United States, and they're being discriminated against, let me go back and use the accommodations, employment, and housing. I don't care if they speak with an accent, they don't have English proficiency, I'm on their side. If they are a legal resident of the United States and they are discriminated against, once again, New York City, I'm on that person's side. But saying that you can't use the term illegal alien, it says with intent to demean, humiliate, or harass. Who's the judge of that? I don't know. Is illegal under the law. That using the term, y'all, illegal alien, which is a definition of what the person, if that person lives up to it, if they're here illegally, is illegal under the law. This kind of poppycock is going to be the death of us all. I mean, New York has all the right to do it. I'm not somebody who wants to go, they can do whatever the heck they want. You know, they elect their people, they leave these people to make these laws. New York can do what they want. But this is the dumbest thing. Once again, if you, like somebody said, yeah, get on, I don't want to get on. The people that are legal residents, I don't care. I mean, I think they're going to do a lot better in this country if they have command of the language. But if somebody speaks with a very heavy accent or they don't have command of the, I don't care. If they are a legal citizen, I'm on their side. And I'm going to bust chops on their side if they get discriminated against in employment, housing, and accommodation. Now, if there's a legitimate reason for employment, like somebody needs to speak in English to people, well, then that's a legitimate reason to not get the job. But if they don't get a place to live or they don't get accommodations, I am on that person's side as long as they are a legal citizen of the United States. How is this so foreign to people? How? That when I say illegal alien, doesn't mean I hate people. It means a definitive term. It's a definition. And if the person isn't an illegal alien, then it's a misnomer. And it should be clarified, but that's not, if they say somebody's a legal alien, they prove that they are a legal citizen, then that person needs to then call them a legal citizen. New York is making this law with a $250,000 per occurrence fine for using that term. Holy cow. And they also said to tell somebody to go back to your country. It's a discriminator, you know, and I would say there's one that's harder to defend, right? Let's take that one. That's more exciting. That's a little, just put some more weight on the bar here. Try to lift this one. To say, go back to your own country, do I find that tacky? Absolutely. But is that something that you would fine a citizen for saying that for $250,000? It is, once again, if the person is a legal citizen, and they are denied housing, employment, accommodations, I am on their side and I will stand with them all day long. I don't care what they look like. I don't care. English proficiency. But if somebody is illegal, they're an illegal alien. and as tacky as I might take it for somebody to say, go back to your own country, which I would find tacky, it's something that doesn't go on in my world or my house, people still have the right to say that. First Amendment, unless you're in New York. And once again, is I know it doesn't satisfy everybody's bloodlust for it, but I'll defend New York's right to be an idiot, too. I mean, they can do that. But I just want to point out what's going on there. And how does that actually change anything? If the only reason somebody wouldn't out themselves for saying it is because of a fine, what have you changed? You haven't changed a heart. You haven't changed a mind. And when I use the term illegal alien, which I've used it like, 17 times now? They'll have to try to extradite me to New York. The show can be heard in New York online. Every time I say illegal alien, I'm not doing that. It is a definitive statement about somebody's immigration status, that they don't have one, that they came in illegally. And that could define anybody who enters the United States illegally. Bart is in Sims. He's first up. Hey, Bart.
Yes, sir. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Hey, I agree with you 100%, but, you know, our government just does not seem, or most of our government, I guess I need to say it that way, they don't even know what illegal is.
Well, I mean, if you say, if somebody's being discriminated against, and they say that they're an illegal alien, and it turns out they're legal, then the problem is on the housing people or the employment or whatever, because they're a legal citizen. They're an American. That's great. But if somebody is illegally in the country, they are an illegal alien. I don't know what...
Exactly. I mean, that's just no other way around it. Well, I'll say this right quick. I was in a store, okay? Went in a long time. I won't even say the name of the store, but I went in there 2-3 times a week. All right, and I'm not picking on anybody in particular, but that's just, there's these several Mexicans right behind me, okay? And they were just yapping in their own tongue, which is, you know, I guess they got a right to do.
That's
and
Spanish,
all I said
yeah.
to the cashier, I wouldn't talk to them. I just said, you know, it'd be nice if they had to learn English. But
that's not,
you know,
a law.
I got in trouble about that.
Well, okay, and if the person in the store doesn't want you saying that, that's a personal interaction. And not, you know...
Well, I did. That's what I'm saying. I was talking to the cashier. I wouldn't even talk. But anyway, the owner reamed me out. Followed me outside and reamed me out for offending their customers.
Well, I mean, but that's a private business making a choice. Now, here's the thing. Does the fact that they were speaking Spanish mean anything to do with their immigration status? They could be...
Well, I mean, yeah, I didn't know.
No, you don't. I mean, there's plenty of people who speak Spanish. I speak Spanish at the dinner table to my daughter sometimes. And I was born here. I can prove it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's...
Well, I didn't ask for their green card or nothing.
Right. Well, and that's what I'm saying. Just because... And that's one frustration. Well, I am so frustrated with New York. I'm also frustrated with people say, if somebody speaks Spanish or speaks English with a Spanish accent, they must be a legal immigrant. That's also... That's not true. It's not
no,
true
that's
at all.
True. I agree with you.
So, we need to focus on... If the person is in the country illegally, then I'm going to keep saying it. They're an illegal immigrant. If the person, no matter how they look or how they speak, is in the country legally, then they're a legal citizen or a legal resident, or they're a legal citizen. And that's a great thing.
That's right.
Thank you, Bart. Appreciate your call. I mean, that's why I don't get invited to dinner parties, right? Because I make everybody mad. Sorry. And somebody say on the text line here, intent is determined the same way someone determines what is pornography. You know it when you see it. Oh, who was that? What Supreme Court justice? What was it? Was it Stewart? I may be wrong. Stewart, or was it? I think it was Stewart. One of them that said that about, I'll know it when I see it. I don't like that measure either. You know, I don't like that. I don't like the arbitrary. It's why I'm a fan of the rule of law. I don't like arbitrary human beings making decisions. You know, this case is like this and this case is like that. New York still has the right, unfortunately, to make something like this. But the first person they go after and fine may challenge them on a First Amendment right. You have the First Amendment right to say whatever. You have the First Amendment right to say what Bart said. You have the First Amendment right. Doesn't mean it's polite conversation, but once again, the First Amendment's not here to protect polite conversation, is it? But yes, also, just as this is not a ruling, this is just an opinion. And my opinion is, do not judge books by the cover, okay? Do not judge books by... But if somebody came into our country illegally, I don't care where they came from, pick a country, then they're illegal immigrant. And I'm going to keep using that term. At the same time, I make no judgments because of people's accents or how they look. I make it how they got into the country. And if they go through the ringer that so many others have had, I welcome them aboard as Americans, man. That's my take. We'll get yours when we get back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
And like I said, before you know it, it's Columbus Day. It sneaks up on you every time. I haven't bought any of my gifts for Columbus Day. By the way, tomorrow's October. Have you done any of your Columbus Day shopping?
Oh, yeah, I got that out of the way early. You know, it seems like they put up the Columbus Day things earlier every year.
Every year it gets like don't even make way for any other holiday. It's in May. They start putting up you can't even get Independence Day up because of the Columbus Day stuff. They have some places like Miami always had a big Columbus Day regatta.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's a Monday in October at some point. I don't know which somebody's going to text in, but they had a big regatta, and there's always like major shenanigans, like the Marine Police down there in Miami. I remember seeing headlines, 74 arrests made today at Columbus Day Regatta. I'm going, holy cow! They got like half a bigger boat out there to call the arrests
than what Columbus was on. That's right.
That's right. They should name the paddy wagon boats
Nina Pinta.
Santa Maria.
Yeah, you know, and it also brings to mind the greatest Sopranos episode ever was the Columbus Day episode where they were having Columbus Day parades and a parade.
And Native Americans were upset with that parade.
That's right. And
I do remember that.
Tony and crew had to go, you know, make things right. That reminds me of that.
Anything that brings us back to the Sopranos is a good thing. Also, you point out, and we're coming to the phones, y'all hold on, but you point out today is National...
Yeah, podcast day. So they have we talk about how there's a day for everything.
This is ridiculous. There's now a national podcast. As much as I dig the podcast, and we do, there's a day for it.
Yeah, there's a day for it, which I too think is ridiculous. But why not plug our own podcast on International Podcast Day? Because even though it doesn't make sense, right? A radio station with podcasts.
Go figure.
But we have over 45 hours of podcasts, fresh new podcasts every single week. You can get them iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, TuneIn, or our website, fmtalk1065.com, and listen to it on demand. I call it instead of like DVR for TV, it's DAR, digital audio. I forget what the R stands for, but that's what it is.
Recording, probably?
Recording.
Guess with the recording.
Probably so.
R for recording?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Okay, because and before I get my arm all out of socket, patting ourselves on the back, I was with the other people up at the 72 different radio shows up at that event last week in Washington, and they were talking podcasts, and they're like, well, I podcast my show. We do, you know, whatever, 15 hours a week podcast. I said, isn't that cute? We do 45. And then I got up and did the end zone dance.
Yeah.
Spiked my Dasani water and strutted on by.
The Super Bowl shuffle.
That's why they like me so much. All right. So today, celebrate and go. You know what? If you're somebody who just goes from time to time to the website and gets a, you know, a la carte podcast, celebrate today's National Podcast Day and sign up at iTunes or Stitcher or any of the other platforms and subscribe. And when you do listen to a podcast, it does mean something to us if you give us whatever stars or thumbs up or smiley face, whatever ranking things they have on there. Go ahead and give us all of them available.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just give us all the stars.
All right, very good. That's the update, National Podcast Day. I don't even know. I mean, I'm not even ready for Columbus Day. This one snuck up on me. Let's go to the phones. And Dave in Silver Hill is first up. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Sean. How you doing today?
I'm good, man. Thanks for the call.
All right. Talking about the whistleblower, should they or should they not be exposed?
Yeah.
And it's just an opinion that I have, like everyone else is entitled to theirs. But and I am a Trump supporter. However, it has nothing to do with Trump. I'd say the same thing if it was Hillary.
Okay.
I believe if you make an accusation, if you're brave enough to blow the whistle, then you should be brave enough to step forward and say, yes, I blew the whistle, and here is why, and lay out why, you know, what your case is, why you have brought this out. In this case, it appears to me from all the media, and God only knows what we get that's true from the media, any of them, but my understanding is this is hearsay at best, from the whistleblower themselves that shouldn't even be being considered for anything unless you do a behind the a background investigation between everything and find out what truly, what do we have here? Right now, it just seems like there's a whole bunch of grandstanding as there has been for years now in Washington. I think the real answer for the American people would be, let's just impeach everyone in D.C.
That's right.
With the exception of Donald Trump, and start all over again.
You can imagine the time the members of Congress that would have to be conducting their own impeachment proceedings.
That'd be a fun show, wouldn't it?
You know, this is an interesting question, and I don't know. I have to look through the code because I don't know the code. But is the purpose of the whistleblower protections, which I like the idea of whistleblower protections, is it to protect identity or is it to protect the person? Meaning, if, like you said, the person would stand up and say, "Yes, it's me, Sean Sullivan. I'm the whistleblower," and you would link your name to the whistleblowing, but then you would be protected from anybody suing you, losing your job. Would those be the protections? You see what I'm saying? That it wouldn't protect your identity.
Yeah, all those protections, I totally agree with. I'm just saying you shouldn't be allowed to stand in the shadows and make accusations against anyone, rather it's Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton, you, me, or anyone else, that if you're going to make accusations, then be willing to step forward into the light and say, this is what I have to tell you about this person. And yeah, protect, they shouldn't have to lose their job, and they shouldn't have to fear, for their lives. And the truth be told is, from the conservatives, generally we don't make threats and carry out plans for, we're going to kill you because you came after our guy. At the very same time, there's risk in everything. And doing the right thing, there's risk.
You're right.
So if you're so sure that you're doing the right thing, be willing to take the risk.
It's true. It's true. I appreciate the call. Thanks for what was the – reminds me of the old – I don't know how old adage, but it was something my parents said. They'd say, "Well, I don't know what decision to make." And they say, "Which one is the most uncomfortable? Which one's not the easiest? Which is the hardest choice?" And I tell them, they say, "Well, that's probably the right choice." I'm like, I didn't want to hear that. It's not what I wanted to hear. Can't you tell me it's the easy choice? Never. It was never the easy choice. Well, what are your choices? It's this and this. Which one's the hardest? Well, it's this one. Well, then do that. I don't want to do that. another question here on the whistleblowers, how far do those protections go? In other words, let's say it's anonymity. And I want to protect that because I think the whistleblowers are important. They're important at business level, government level, for sure. I want to protect that. How many degrees of separation do you – let's say you want to stick with the anonymity in it. How many degrees away from the actual – whistleblower do you protect, right? Like Steve saying, if it's hearsay and this person's heard it from somebody else, how far do you go before you say, you know what, you're not, now you heard it from a you don't get protection? It's where is that level? Maybe it's codified, maybe it's written down somewhere. I haven't heard it. It's by the way too, you can argue, I'll go ahead and make your argument on the flip side here of what the whistleblower should worry about. You have rhetoric coming from the president and others out there and it's more actually, the president says he wants to meet the whistleblowers, and the president hasn't said specific things as much about the whistleblowers he has Adam Schiff, but there's a lot of hot rhetoric going around on this. Obviously, people are engaged and upset on this, and I want to make sure that we... In dealing with this now, you keep your eye open that you want the rule of law and you want those protections, because right now it might be your person that's getting the fiery poker of this, but it may be turned around one day. Don't you want to make sure that the law isn't changed and we continue? Because as that happens, and it happened a lot during the Bush administration, and people would say, well, he's doing the right thing for the country and all that, and people would nod along. But in doing that, we erode civil liberties, we erode protections, and we grow the strength. I don't think we're totalitarian or anything of the ilk that seems to be what the left likes to throw out there. But have we, over the Obama administration and the preceding Bush administration, moved farther to that? Sure. Sure we have. I mean, I think we're there. All right. So podcast-wise, Dan celebrating today's National Podcast Day, saying, if it wasn't for your podcast, I wouldn't be able to listen to Bill Finch on the weeks that I'm too hungover to catch the first hour of his show. See, that's valuable, Dan. That's how you use a podcast to help you. Oh, by the way, too, yes, a bunch of people seconded when I said it was Stewart. I thought it was Justice Stewart about pornography. I know it when I see it. Y'all have confirmed it. I was close there. I was torn between a couple, but I went with Stewart, and I got lucky. I just got lucky and spun the wheel, and I was right on that one. But the conspiracy that's going on in Washington, right? The conspiracy is one that's going to involve people that are political players and people that are not. Now, the question is on this whistleblower, I think is why many would like to see the identity, is to see if this person is that political player. If that person is there as a civil servant, just doing their job, who saw something, you know, see something, say something, or is it somebody who is doing it for political motives? Or is it a combination? Is it a civil servant who saw something they were worried about, and when they said something about it, it was picked up by a third party who was using it for political effect? Maybe the second party, right? The hearsay, because you have the original person who says something, and now we have the whistleblower being basically a repeater of what they heard. Maybe they're doing it for the political effect, but the original person that saw it was not. I think there's a lot to be sussed out here, and there's going to be so much sussing going on in Washington. It'll be a sus fest. And then the next thing you'll know, you look up and it's Columbus Day. Just like that. You don't have done no decoration, no shopping.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
At 152 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. I'll go through some of these texts. And I want to look at the other angle here. You know, Steve bringing up different questions about the whistleblower and anonymity. Also, it's what Congressman Mo Brooks brought up too. Under the Sixth Amendment, shouldn't you have, and who was talking about this morning too? I think Adman called in about this morning. Shouldn't you have the right to face your accuser, right? Under the Sixth Amendment. There's a bunch of stuff that, like, today's political world, you know, whether it was state politics or federal politics, we're like, yeah, we got to answer that one. That hadn't been challenged before. Quote here from a story by our buddy Jeff Poor. Congressman Mo Brooks was on Jeff's radio show. He said, there's two parts to it. One is the transcript and the conversation between the Ukraine president and Donald Trump, and there is zero evidence of an impeachable offense in that transcript. And then you got the whistleblower's report, which is 100% gossip, rumor, and hearsay. Now, keep in mind, I have legal training. This is Congressman Brooks talking. That means that I do, to some degree, have an idea of what evidence is prohibited and that has weight and what does not. Probative and has weight and what does not. And there is zero in the whistleblower's complaint of any probative nature. None of that would be allowed in the court of law because it's rumor mill, hearsay, all that kind of stuff. Jeff goes on to write, Brooks went on to add that the whistleblower's identity should be revealed based on the Sixth Amendment, which he argued allows the accused to confront his accuser. Quote here from Congressman Brooks. He said, personally, I'm pushing right now for that whistleblower to be disclosed and revealed. Under the Sixth Amendment, a person accused of a crime has the absolute right to confront his accusers, and that includes for little itty-bitty offenses like shoplifting or various traffic offenses. And if the accuser has to be publicly revealed under those circumstances, by golly, shouldn't it apply to when the accuser anonymously is claiming that the President of the United States has committed the kinds of offenses that embody impeachment? And so, I want this accuser revealed. These people who hide behind curtains and make serious accusations, I'm sorry, but that's not the way a judicial proceeding is supposed to operate, nor should it be the way an impeachment proceeding should operate. operate. So, quote there from Congressman Mo Brooks on the Sixth Amendment and facing your accusers. It brings another interesting angle to it. I don't know. I don't have, you know, there's so many things that I don't have answers to. While I want to protect whistleblowers, I want there still to be whistleblowers out there, because that's how you find out things that need finding out. What about the Sixth Amendment? This texter says, too, where is it now? And I've, okay, yeah, I know the whistle. This texter said, I know the whistleblower of all the water contaminant issues on the Eastern Shore, and he got fired immediately. So I want to protect that kind of person. Do we protect them because of their identity, or do we protect them from getting fired immediately? And there has to be some recourse. If you're a whistleblower, there has to be some protections for you. If you say, hey, this is going on where I work, this factory, this is something that hurts people, and you come out and say it, you should be protected. I think the interesting thing is it keeping you anonymous, or is it protecting you from getting fired, getting sued, losing further jobs and revenue? Is that what the protection should be? Like the person that comes out and you say, okay, it's Jane Smith who was the whistleblower. But now if somebody tries to take retribution against Jane Smith, we'll have the full force of the government to protect it. Is that the better way to do it? Let's see. Terry says, I think we want people who hear things third hand to report them so they come to light. However, once the complaints are investigated and found and unfounded, the anonymity should disappear. That's interesting, Terry, that you bring the complaint in anonymity. Okay, this is almost like having somebody pay for legal expenses, right, if they bring a bogus lawsuit. So you would have, in Terry's mind, this is interesting, the people would be protected, they'd be anonymous while the report is being investigated. If you find out that that complaint was unfounded, then you reveal the identity of the accuser. Interesting stuff. There's a Sixth Amendment issue going on here. There's whistleblower protections. There's also the idea that, I said, maybe this could be split, and we'll find out, because the whistleblower, air quotes here in this situation against the president, is secondhand information, right? That's what we've heard. It's hearsay. Okay. So could the original person that reported this be a civil servant and be doing it because they thought something was wrong? And then they reported it, and the person that picked it up and carried it forward to the next step had a political interest in it. Maybe one of them was doing it for the right reasons, and maybe one of them said, huh, give that right here. I'll take care of that. I know what to do with that. And they do it for political reasons. It's a tough one. I mean, it's a tough one that I think I can agree with Congressman Brooks and say you have the right to face your accuser, Sixth Amendment protection. At the same time, do you want to put a chill through whistleblowers and then we don't find out anything out there? It's a tough one, which makes it an interesting discussion. All right, we'll continue that one as well. And we pick up, we'll do a show tomorrow? Yeah, nods, yeah. Even though it won't be National Podcast Day, we're still doing a show? Okay, good. We'll do the show, and we'll even podcast it tomorrow. We'll do that Mobile Morning starting at 6. Remember the online opinion poll question. I want to hear from you. Should the identity of the White House whistleblower be revealed? It's the 1-800-GOT-JUNK online online opinion poll question. Should the identity of the White House whistleblower be released? Let's see. Let's refresh. 75% of y'all saying yes, 25% saying no. We'll get more votes, and we'll tally these and report on them tomorrow. You can vote online, front page of FMTalk1065.com. All right. As if Paul Feinbaum needed anything else to talk about, he's got the Alabama versus Mississippi college football Saturday to discuss that, and the new AP rankings with Bama at number one. That along with, I'm sure, a scad of interesting calls coming in, and Paul Feinbaum on the way next. All right, we'll see y'all. Website, fmtalk1065.com. Check us out, facebook.com/fmtalk1065. And find me directly on Twitter, at fmtalk1065, where I've posted up a picture of a then, I think, 10 or 11-year-old me with now late Alabama Congressman Jack Edwards. Y'all check it out. See you then. Hey.